is going. You know, you try to run an orderly podcast around here.
We all had homework. You have to see Batman. Yeah. You have to see Indie Game the movie.
Not even hard homework. Come on.
All right. We started the podcast twice today.
All right, welcome to episode 69 for the Rated A podcast for the website, nerdappropriate.com. We're here Saturday morning. How are you guys doing?
Great.
I'm great.
Awesome.
This is the second time we've started this podcast.
This is crazy. I feel like the us from 5 minutes ago traveled to the future to tell the future us what we us are saying. And what number are we thinking of?
Yeah, don't forget to wind your watch.
Oh, man. I don't know
what just
happened. I was going to do it again. I was going to say, wow, I'm so surprised we started this off without saying 69. And
it is. Happen. So this is our wonderful episode 69, and it's been a wild ride. and here we are again. Let's be honest with the audience. We recorded about 10 minutes of this without actually hitting the record button. So... we're going to tell the same stories that we already told.
This is going to sound real dry.
Only better this time. We have to do it with more pizzazz and more flair.
I don't even remember what stories we told. What did we tell?
I talked about breakfast quesadilla.
Oh, you had a breakfast quesadilla?
Yes. And it was delicious.
And then I said, I'm jealous because I've now started my PAX diet. So you should send me pictures of your amazing, awesome food.
I like just recapping the stories instead of
and
telling.
And then Scott chimed in and said,
oh, I'm getting into fighting shape for PAX.
Yeah.
And then I said, I'm not going to PAX. Wah, wah.
Then I said, it's okay. PAX is awesome.
But you got to go to Comic-Con.
And then I did get to go to Comic-Con. And Hillary agreed.
And then we started talking about con cough and PAX pox.
And I said that I slept with patient zero and still didn't get sick.
And then I said I had no excuse because I've gotten a flu shot. Therefore, I should have been exempt from said plague. And then Matt said...
I said that when I moved to New York, I got a flu shot and then got horribly sick that night and vomited for 6 hours and found out that I'm in the 1% of people that get sick when they get flu shots.
But then me being me, I had to one up you.
And you had delirious fever.
And then I had a fever in which I hallucinated and screamed at nothing and entertained my husband for a night saying that the masks were coming to get me.
And then so, I asked if it was the mask from the 80s cartoon. But I don't think you heard it.
And I said I loved that 80s cartoon.
I don't know what it is.
Because you're not a boy.
It was good.
It was good. They were in cars that like kind of transformed into like battle cars. And then they wore helmets that were like awesome. I don't really know what the helmets had to do with anything.
Each helmet had a different power.
Did they have powers in the helmet?
Yeah, like one guy could like shoot like a laser, a different laser. It was cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. And they were all like Miami Vice colors. Everything was like pastel.
Yes.
Yeah. Teal and pink. It was awesome.
I don't know. Cool. I liked She-Ra, She-Ra, Thundercats, and Gem. Those were my choices.
All right.
I watched the pilot for Gem again.
I was going to say, aren't most of those coming back?
Surprisingly, still all that old stuff's still pretty good. It holds up, I got to say. At least I feel like it does.
Hmm. Awesome.
Yeah. So let's see.
Good recap, guys.
Yeah, that was the fast-forwarded version, which will make Scott's job a lot easier. He's smiling. He's like, oh, that's much better.
No, editing. Right. Yeah. So what have you guys been up to this week? Have you done anything cool?
I've been catching up on like a lot of movies and stuff that I missed and catching up on a little bit of gaming. Still I've only been back in town for doing a lot of catch up, you know, trying to get ready to go back to work next week.
Yeah,
I'm really excited about it, let me tell you. If you find my never mind, I'm not gonna make a horrible joke anyway.
Good call.
I thought about it for a couple of seconds, I'm eager to get back to
mark it on the calendar. Ash thought about a joke before he said it on the podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, it took 69 episodes. for me to hold back. Sometimes on 69, you have to hold back.
Sometimes.
Oh, God. What?
You want to get all the way through it. So, Scott, what have you been doing this week?
Well, The Wrecketeer came out this week.
Awesome.
Oh, Hillary's done. She's done. Dunzo.
I feel like I finished that joke and I moved on.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I played The Wrecketeer, and I've been playing some Dance Central in preparation for PAX.
We need to talk about the conditions in which you played The Wrecketeer, because you played it in pretty much like North Korea, like sweat torture.
Yes.
Why don't you explain what happened to you?
I managed to block this out of my memory, but pretty much what happened is that my air conditioning broke. And of course, it's like hot everywhere in the country, but it's also hot here in Florida. And our house, as it stands anyways, is kind of old and has really bad insulation. So we were without air conditioning for 24 hours. And I was home while the guy was fixing the AC. And at the worst part of the day, like the worst it ever got, it was 92 degrees inside the house.
That's brutal.
What was the humidity?
It's Florida. It's like 197%.
Yeah. No, really.
So, you're like swimming and requiring an oxygen tank at all times in the state of Florida.
So the air came back on, and you know, it takes a long time to cool the house down. So by the time it was like bedtime, it was like 86 in the house. And I told myself, you know, I was like, I can't go to sleep. So I had just bought The Wrecketeer, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to play The Wrecketeer because I don't give a shit.
I'm just going to start.
Yeah. So I'm like, it's like 11:30. I'm playing Wrecketeer. I'm sweating. I'm tired. Like, don't care. Had a great time. So that was my week.
Awesome.
That's great. Yeah.
I actually learned that because in Florida, air conditioning is so prevalent, like in all houses and all cars. And like, you know, there is no such thing as not having AC anywhere in any room at all. Mm-hmm. So I never really thought about it. But when I moved up here, I learned that like half of the job of an AC unit is to dehumidify your apartment. Like, it actually regulates the humidity inside apartment.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah, my AC unit now, which is like a brand new one, actually has this crazy bucket inside of it that collects all the humidity, and then there's like this straw that's attached that drains a line and spits it outside because there's so much humidity. So it's like constantly it's kind of crazy.
That's what we had in that house that we owned in Florida. It was the same.
Crazy bucket.
How about you, Hillary? What have you been up to?
So this week I've been working a lot, but on top of that, my dog decided to swallow a toy. So I've been on Dog Watch 2012. I had to take him in, and they induced him vomiting and stuff, and he had thrown up like squeaky toys that had been in his stomach for I don't know, probably like years. I mean, he's 3 years old, and he's been playing with squeaky toys since he was a puppy. You know, just the little clear,
just the squeaker. Yeah.
And she like brought in this tub of vomit because he'd been throwing up all night. So I didn't even know that there was even stuff left inside, you know, in his tummy. And she like brought this bucket full of like puke. And there were like bits of toys, like random toys that were in there.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So I have to keep watching him. But poor guy, he's probably been, you know, sick for a while. And just, he's a husky, so he's just got so much energy. You would never know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it a big toy he swallowed this time, or was it?
No. So he had, I don't know why, I don't know where, you know, I thought that this would be okay, but he had like a rubber bone. And he just would gnaw on it, and it was like, oh, it was cheap, you know, no big deal. I got it in a bin at Target or whatever. And he was going crazy on it, and he had like broken off pieces and actually swallowed it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they were too big for him to
pass.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, so now I'm still watching him, and if he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't get better soon, then he'll have to have surgery, which is sad.
Oh,
poor Stowe's. Yeah, he's okay.
Well, I'm glad he's okay.
But that was my big trauma this week.
That sucks.
He's my kid, you know.
Yeah,
no, I hear you.
Yeah,
we hear that.
We're all in the same boat.
Puppy lovers.
That's right.
Well, I canceled my Star Wars Old Republic account this week.
Hey. Ooh. It's sad.
I'm not playing it, and I was telling you guys off the air, quote unquote, that I was redoing my budget and stuff this week. So I went through my PayPal account to see what was like my recurring payments that were getting withdrawn. And that was one of them. And I looked at it and I just was like, I am not getting $15 a month of entertainment out of this right now. And
would you start playing again if it goes free to play?
I think it's more of a time issue and not as much a quality of game or price issue.
Okay.
If I was playing it, I would happily still pay the $15. I'm just literally, you know, we've talked about it, MMO fatigue kind of thing, and I just we never really coordinated initially when we started playing, so we all kind of got out of whack with our characters and what levels we were all at, and just, you know, just never caught up, and that was the end of it, kind of. So
yeah, it's a bummer.
It is.
Yeah.
So on today's podcast, we're going to talk about the Olympics.
Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Let's do the rundown. We're going to talk about things like the Olympics and violence in video games and Windows 8 and Avengers. We're going to talk about The Dark Knight Rises. We're going to review Wrecketeer. And our question of the week, sort of in the spirit of the Olympic Games, is the video game triathlon becomes the newest Olympic sport. What three games comprise the event?
That was your question, Scott.
That was my question.
It was on the fly, and it was very good, so thank you.
Yeah, that's a thinker question. Like,
I'm having trouble answering this question.
I am too.
Mine was like, well, since it's episode 69, we should totes ask about 69ing.
what?
I'm not going to continue the joke. I'll just stop the joke right there. Sorry. I apologize for the joke I almost made.
Yeah, that's my favorite noise.
So let's kick it off. Hillary, now I know that you watched the opening ceremonies as well as I did. Did anybody else watch the opening ceremonies? And what do you think? I agree. Does anybody care? All that kind of stuff. Let's talk about the Olympics. Let's be a sports podcast for 5 minutes.
How funny. Yeah, I don't know. I watched the Olympics, the opening ceremony. I didn't watch the very, very beginning, and I did get a little bit tired of watching it. And there was a lot of commercials. But, I asked the question, you know, because the Olympics has changed from, you know, when we were kids, it was every 4 years. And you know, for a long time, it was every 4 years. And you knew, oh, my God, it's Olympic year. And I think it was also consequentially leap year, strangely enough. But, you know, that was really exciting because you're like, oh, we get the summer and the winter, like amazing. And now that it's every 2 years, I feel like it's always here. Maybe. And Dave said maybe it's because you're getting old and you've seen too many Olympics. And I'm like, right? Could be true. It's always called old.
I kind of feel the opposite way because I like that there's a summer games and a winter games because pretty much – I think a lot of people feel this way, is that like I become an instant fan of the Olympics when they come on. And then when they're not on, I like forget all about it. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Did everybody here watch the opening ceremony or no?
I was watching the film Hesher while I was on. The film was good, but me not watching it was bad. I forgot it was on.
Did we all watch NBC's feed then? It sounds like you did, Hillary. Did you, Scott?
Yeah, I did.
So here's my opinion. I thought the opening ceremonies were actually pretty good. Danny Boyle did them, for those that don't know. Danny Boyle put together and orchestrated the opening ceremonies for the Olympics this year. It was this kind of huge, multi-stage change setting that took you from the beginning of England's concept as a country all the way through kind of modern day storytelling and things that are going on. So it went through the Industrial Revolution and up through like more tech driven times like now. The thing that got me, and I think following my Twitter feed, it was the thing that got everyone, was Matt Lauer and Meredith Vieira talking every 3 seconds over over top of what was otherwise an interesting ceremony. Like, I thought it was neat. I thought it looked cool. The music was pretty good. But then it was like, we should note here that the Industrial Revolution happened in England. And you're like, the fuck? Shut up. I don't care. Why are you adding these fun facts to things?
They were narrating the Macy's Day Parade or something like that, right?
It didn't feel like it needed to have space filled, and yet they were there filling space. And then breaking the commercial every 10 minutes. I mean, how often? Yeah. There was commercials constantly through that thing. It was ridiculous.
Well, I mean, it was pre-recorded.
So it was pre-recorded and edited, too.
They could act up however they wanted. Yeah. That was the problem. I was lucky, though, because I got to watch it on mute. I was at a bar.
nice.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did watch it on NBC, but it wasn't Matt Lauer and Meredith. It was two other guys. I don't know who they were. But the thing that I found
that was when
it was late night.
It was Meredith initially, and then it was Matt Lauer and Bob Costas.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, because I did actually recognize Bob Costas. But the thing I felt was interesting.
But go ahead, sorry. Well,
no, yeah, I mean, but it was just really interesting. Yeah, there were sometimes I was like, really? But, you know, I was watching the parades of the athletes coming in from the different mm-hmm. countries. And I just loved how the commentary was all about, oh, and this country is going through, you know, warfare and yada, yada, yada. And it was just, it was interesting stuff because it was historically based and, you know, a lot of the current stuff was, you know, in play. But it was very American of course it is an American channel. It was so American in the type of commentary. And of course I am an American. I am patriotic. I'll just say that. But, you know, I felt like some of it could have been not said.
Djibouti,
you know,
a country whose name you just like to say.
Yes. I was dying when he said that. I was like,
Bob Costas drunk during the. I mean,
and then Bob Costas was like, "Here's another country that's never won a medal," and you're like, "What, dude? Calm down, man."
Don't you think that that's like super rude?
Super rude.
I couldn't even like handle it, and you know, I was like, "And this is why the world hates us."
Yeah.
I don't know, but it was interesting.
Don't all the nations get kind of cocky during the Olympics, though? I mean, because everyone has to have like a certain sense of like real incredible nationalism during the Olympics.
There's getting cocky, and there's like downright pointing out every country that's never won a medal and how they only send like one person, or like the stuff he was pointing out was just weird to point out. It was like for one thing, I really don't need to hear Matt Lauer ever say Djibouti, a country whose name you just like to say ever again in my life.
Oh, the country was Djibouti?
Yeah, there's a country called Djibouti.
He does have a point. He has a point.
But it's just like, it just was inane commentary that, like, it was okay. Like, it was good during the Parade of Countries to an extent. I didn't really love the commentary, but it was fine there because it's like, that is a time filler. Like, you're just watching people walk around a map. During the actual part that Danny Boyle put together, I was like, why is anyone talking during this? Like, there's music, there's things going on. I don't really need anyone voicing over what is happening right now.
Well, didn't Meredith say something like, and the Chinese are wearing red. It's interesting that they really value the color red. It's like, what?
It's
of
just
course.
Like, yeah.
No, like, come on. Well, we don't need right, to. Well, like, yeah.
All of this aside, are you excited for the games? Like the games that are on? Because I have NBC on right like in the background, you know, just kind of like whatever, I'm interested, I'm on board.
I swam for 14 years and this is the only time of any 4 years that I actually get to watch swimming on TV, so I always get into it and try to watch. I get a little fatigued by the second week generally and I don't really know what's happening anymore, but I usually try to keep up. There's a few sports that I'm really interested in. There's a Korean guy who's legally blind who won or got bronze in the archery today.
Wow.
Crazy.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Crazy.
I like the gymnastic stuff. That's better.
Yeah.
Melissa loves the gymnastics. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, you know, I think the Olympics are pretty spectacular and I love all the history behind them. They're hard to keep up with. You pretty much have to like set aside like a chunk of time every night in order to keep up. I feel like this is going to be like one of the first times that a lot of content is going to be available digitally. Not all of it, obviously.
If you have cable, it is.
If you have cable, it's all available.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's weird. But I think that's going to be kind of cool to try and, you know, keep up with it in that way. But, you know, I mean, they only come around every couple of years. So I think it's, you know, cool that we're all kind of tuning in.
NBC, to bring it back to nerdy isms, NBC did put out two apps for the Olympics.
Mm.
One Scott can't use because it's cable required, where you can watch.
Cut the cord. I'm still doing it. Awesome.
You can watch all the stuff on your tablet or on your phone. And then the other one I think you can use, Scott, is actually a really good news and scores and like tracking of the game. So you can kind of get the schedule of when stuff's happening on TV and you can see news and stories based around it and you can get all the results and things that are coming in kind of live. And that one's actually done really well. I've got them both on my tablet. So recommend it. Cool. But so you put in the show notes that there's a game like there always is that came out as well. Did you read this? I didn't get to read the review. Is it reviewed?
The review basically can be capsulized in saying this game is extremely shallow. So I mean it was basically made, it appears to be have been made just to capitalize on the the traction of the Olympics themselves. And it, you know, it's about London Olympics.
Yeah.
But yes, there is a video game should you want to partake in the virtual playing of sports.
I remember in, I think it was 96, they put an Olympic game out, and Scott and our other two friends, Adam and Andrew, and I bought the 96 Olympics for like the PS1 at Blockbuster for like $5. And we would sit there and play this awful game over and over again for no known reason whatsoever.
Like discus throwing.
Yeah. Oh, it was awful.
It was like the old days, like when you'd get a Nintendo game, that was like the one game you'd get for like months. And it's like, I remember when I was a little kid, I was probably like, I don't know, 8 or something. My mom got me a Nintendo game called Karate. That's what it was called. It was just called Karate. And God, that was a fucking awful Nintendo game. And I played it so much. And, you know, it
you
being
didn't have
Nintendo
choice.
Game. No, I was like, this is the one game I have. Either that or I can go back to playing like Duck Hunt, you know. So
yeah.
So I played a lot of Karate.
Did you not have Kung Fu? Because that's where it was at, man.
I don't remember Kung Fu. I probably didn't have it. I did end up getting Karnov, the fire-breathing Russian, which needs to be remade.
Because
that game was fucking rad. If
any
listeners out there have played Karnov, the fire-breathing Russian, that definitely needs to have a resurgence because that game was
that
incredible.
That is so wrong.
You essentially, if you guys want to Google it real quick, essentially you looked like Zangief and you had different fireball attacks and you ran around these stages and you just breathed fire on everything and it was beautiful. Yeah.
I think they played this game on Nick Arcade, actually.
Did they?
Yeah.
Karnov.
You remember that?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Remember when it came back on Game Show TV and we would watch it?
Yeah. Good times.
So, Hillary, why don't you intro this next one, Violence in Video Games?
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is a larger discussion and we don't have to go there. But I just thought it was interesting that the LA Times did a piece on a guy who created, I think, Sons of Anarchy. Kurt Sutter. He actually tweeted right after the Colorado shooting, you know, something about how he is revisiting his stance on violence as a means to storytelling. It's kind of interesting when something like that happens, you start to kind of step out of the day-to-day and kind of look at the bigger picture and wonder perhaps the prevalence of violence within media, meaning video games, movies, TV, etc. You know, does that have a direct effect or a direct impact onto, you know, the way that people behave socially? So it was just interesting. And the thing that got me was, you know, it's interesting that we can get these kind of insights from the creators of these types of stories just because of things like social media. So if he would have never tweeted, we may have never known that he was second guessing kind of his use of violence. What do you guys think?
It's so strange because, I mean, obviously, you know, games right now are incredibly ultra violent, but I also think, you know, they are doing their best to like not allow games like that to get into the hands of children. But, you know, it's risky because the internet is, I mean, like, you know, we talked about this before on the podcast, obviously, but when I was a kid, there was no such thing as when I was a little kid, there was no such thing as the internet and you couldn't just get on and type in like blowjob and all of a sudden there'd be 7 million blowjobs. You know what I mean? That didn't exist.
I'm going to try that. Hold on.
No, try 69. Yeah.
Don't do 69. So I'm just saying the way that content exists today is very different from when we were all kids. And obviously a lot of these video games, they're being made for people that are, you know, the demographic now is, you know, 30 to 37 is the most popular video game demographic. So obviously games are not necessarily being catered or manufactured for children. So obviously they're going to be violent. They're going to be for people like us that can handle that sort of thing. So I don't know. I don't know if there really is an answer.
Are we just conditioned because it's the world in which we kind of grew up?
Maybe, the American way.
Just that, but we all have been playing video games since we were children. Was kind of our upbringing.
I think there's two bits to this though. There are games and media, television and movies, that glorify violence, and then there's ones that use violence to tell a story in like a realistic way. Like I'm watching The Wire right now, which I will tell everyone every day for the rest of my life because it's quite possibly one of the best TV shows I've ever seen, and it's mega violent. Like there's violence in that show that's brutal, but it's done in a very like grounded, not in a way like, hey, look how awesome this violence is. Like, this dude's shooting that dude, and it's great. It's like it really kind of pushes you back and makes you think about it. Not in a way of like, oh, that looked awesome, you know. Not in a John Woo way, you know, where you're like,
yeah,
dudes flying back in like slow motion bullets and stuff. So I think there's that, and I think that's, you know, because like Red Dead is a relatively violent game. You're basically, your job is turn around and shoot things. But I don't feel like it glorifies violence in a way. I think it was handled in a different medium of how they told the story versus maybe Grand Theft Auto, which I feel like does glorify violence a little bit more in a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I wonder, I mean, I don't know. I wonder if, you know, holding a gun virtually kind of lessens the impact of holding a gun in reality. I don't know if, you know, I go back and visit my family in Missouri and we shoot things. So
yeah.
It was, you know, and actually the first moment I ever held a gun, I mean, I was super sweaty. I was super nervous, you know, but it was like, you know, I pictured myself how we would shoot in a video game, and that, you know, thread in between is something that's a little frightening if you think about it in the context of other things. You know what I mean? So if it's like, yeah, it's just like a video game, well, that's shocking. You know?
No. Yeah. And you're touching on something that's really like kind of treading on thin ice, because, you know, like the question has been raised 1,000 times. Do video games actually lead to violent actions? And my personal stance is, no, I think 99.9% of the population knows the difference between reality and a video game. But I also do think that, you know, all violence, whether it be in comic books or television or literature, whatever, it does desensitize you to a degree. Absolutely. There's, you know, having exposure to it, even virtual exposure to it, is going to desensitize you in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I mean, giving a gun to a sane person is a lot different than giving a gun to a crazy person, you know. And yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. And I think we are desensitized, but I'm not saying by any means we should outlaw violence, because it's
awesome.
That's awesome, but yeah, it's also the human condition, no? I mean, that's kind of the way it's always been, and that's kind of who we are as a species. So, I mean, I don't know.
Not to cut you off, a perfect example of how ridiculous it is, though, if you look at Xbox Live avatars now, they don't sell virtual guns anymore. All the guns they sell for your avatars are all like Nerf colored, so they're all like orange and stuff. And even the bullets that they fire and like the muzzle flashes and stuff are all like super cartoony. So you can't even get, like, let's say you wanted to get like a Gears of War Lancer or something like that for your avatar. You can't buy it anymore on Xbox. It's going to be like a pink Lancer that shoots like sparklies out of it. So like, you know,
bubbles.
Dead serious. And that just came across, you know, last year we talked about it, but it's weird. Like, they're doing all this extra stuff to cover themselves, but I don't think there's anything that can like save us, you know, as a society from violence. Like,
well,
I don't know.
I think, I mean, this culture is like totally in love with violence, but we're like publicly, like, we're uncomfortable with sexual matters. So what if we just, instead of having ultra violent games, we just had ultra sexual games instead?
Because I think
The Witcher,
it would sell. Yeah. It would sell just as evenly as the violent games, I think. Yeah. Not in America.
No, I mean, The Witcher is not an American made.
Polish.
Yeah. It's Polish.
That is really funny, though.
So, Matt, why don't you tell us why Valve and Blizzard hate Windows 8?
I would love to tell you why. I have no fucking clue why, because they've given zero solid reason as to why they hate this thing. I've got some guesses, and I want to hear your guys' guesses. But basically, Gabe Newell, you know, owner of Valve, went on All Things D, which is a big digital site / video maker. I know.
Really? That's the name of the site?
All Things D.
All right.
In the interview,
is that .com or .org? Because I bet those two sites are totally different.
In the interview, episode 69, folks. In the interview, he said he talks about what he thinks the future of kind of interaction with games will be and computing, which he references tongue a lot, which is weird. But he also talks about having like a wristband, and everything will just be gestures, and there won't really be a solid interface and stuff. It's interesting to hear somebody who is that far out in the game talk about things, but he also said that Windows 8 will be a total disaster for all people building anything for Windows 8 and for the makers of computers, and that he's going to start supporting Linux in much stronger fashion because he feels that that's truly an open platform, and that Windows will no longer be where Steam maybe makes their money / does their business. And then after that interview came out, the CEO of Blizzard tweeted, "Just read an interesting interview with Gabe. Hit it correctly on every note. Windows 8's going to be a total failure or a total disaster," something along those lines.
Wow.
So those are two, relatively big guys in the gaming industry coming out against Windows 8. But yet again, I will say, and then I read a bunch of comment threads, of course, you know, why not? And I have yet to actually read a solid reason as to why Windows 8 is going to be such a failure. Gabe calls it a UI failure, and I completely disagree, but I also found like the magic key inside of Windows 8. So my theory, I actually read this, I think, on Kotaku. When I read it, I was like, that makes total sense. My theory is that Metro UI has its own app store, and it has its own game store inside of that app store, mm-hmm. and they're pushing their own games a lot harder with this Windows 8. They're kind of closing in a little. They're following the Apple model of closing it up a little bit. And I think Steam, barring them not having a Metro app, will be relegated now to the desktop, which still exists in Windows 8, but it's kind of off to the side. It's not an initial view. And I think there is some... Blizzard and Valve see this as Windows pushing their marketplaces out.
Yeah, I mean, this is total... It's political maneuvering. If you subscribe to the idea that Steam will eventually make their own hardware, this is just a way to, like, you know, you're just drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah.
And you're going, like, you're coming out and going, like, oh, this is going to be a disaster. Oh, and by the way, we're making our own box, which you can now buy, too. So I think this is just some propaganda is what this is.
So, Scott.
Yeah, but this is definitely going to impact, you know, if Valve releases anything on 360 or a next gen Xbox, whatever. Right. Because.
Who knows if they ever will, though? That's the thing. Like, Valve seems pretty...
I don't think Valve wants Windows taking a cut of their market, like, of their profits.
Yeah, but don't... I mean, let's say they were to make a Portal 3.
Yeah. I don't know if they would...
That would really suck if this all would impact my ability to play it on Xbox.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
I would say... I don't think it's going to affect Xbox. I think there is some kind of cognizant, you know, separation between the Xbox and Windows. And I think
both Microsoft.
They are both Microsoft, but I don't think gamers or developers look at them as the same platform. And I think that the Xbox holds such... If the next gen Xbox comes out and does just as well as the current gen Xbox is doing, it doesn't matter that they don't like Windows 8. They're going to still put it out on Xbox. It's just way too big of a platform to.
No, ignore. but what I'm saying is, if they make a big stink about Windows 8 and Microsoft gets mad, they're going to make it probably harder on them to release it on, you know, they're going to be successful on Xbox. If the next gen Xbox is anywhere near as close to as successful, as you said, you know what I mean? I can see, wouldn't you be like, oh, really? You want to talk, you know, some shit about us? Well, we're going to make it harder for you on our successful thing.
My point would be that Gabe Newell also shit on the PS3 for about 2 years straight. And then all of a sudden went into a partnership with him and started having Steam interchange with PS3. And I think the dude likes to talk a big game until he gets his way with what he wants. And then he moves forward with whatever it is. So I don't think, looking at Microsoft with the Xbox, I have a hard time seeing them give an exclusive up to either Steam or to PS3 because they've got a grudge to hold over Windows. Yeah. I think with Windows, even if they fight with Windows, I think they're still going to say, you know, we want you on the Xbox.
I think as long as there's money to be made, Portal 3 will be on Xbox, whatever, Xbox 8 for whatever purposes we're calling it.
I think you hit it right, Scott. I think this is marketplace bitching and that's about it, but we will see. So this got announced, I think, today. Disney came out saying that they are going to make an Avengers themed TV show.
Oh boy.
Supposedly live action, and it's going to be on ABC.
Oh boy.
So
let's hope they throw some fucking money at it, because this show cannot exist without some cash.
They're saying that they are going to delve deeper into the Avengers world. There's no announcements as far as who's going to be in it or on it, or this is brand new like TV breaking news, but
God, you know what would be fucking awesome
if Joss Whedon was behind it?
No, if they just did a S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. That was exactly what I was thinking.
Four badass agents that deal with like power crimes, making like a rip off of Powers.
That was exactly what I was thinking, because I was like, there's no way they're going to pull off a superhero show. Literally zero way. They don't have the money. The people aren't going to care that much. You know, they may love the movie. They're not going to watch it every week.
Yeah.
And I thought like a spy show that involved S.H.I.E.L.D. would be awesome. I totally 100%
agree. Heroes on NBC, like before it got weird, was really good. So you know what I mean?
Before it got weird.
Yeah, but they can't do that sort of, you know, normal people in unusual circumstances thing with the Avengers. Like it's already a world with these mega rich, super powerful things that exist. Like I don't think they can do that kind of beginning, no one knows what's going on thing. So they could do a time spanning S.H.I.E.L.D. one where it like just jumps through like points in S.H.I.E.L.D.'s timeline of things that happened, you know, all the way back to World War II and all. So I think that would be amazing.
But, give it a No One Lives Forever vibe for Scott.
Yeah. You just sold me on the show. I'm on board.
That'd be amazing.
This is not anything new. I mean, seriously, if a movie does well, then there are a lot of times where they try to bring it to TV and it just fails. I mean, the one that I remember the most is kind of lame, but you remember the baseball movie, League of Their Own, with the women baseball players? It's the best movie. It's awesome. It's a good movie. Anyway, they made it into a TV show and it like lasted for, it was horrible.
you just got to capitalize on the timeliness of the situation, just like they did with the Geico Caveman sitcom.
Well, I mean, the one thing that this show may have going for it, yes, Scott, that was
awful.
The one thing that this may have going for it is that it's not like the Avengers is coming out and then it's going to be four more years before another Avengers coming out. There's constantly Marvel movies coming out pretty much for the next 5 years. There's going to be a movie coming out every year. Mm-hmm. So the excitement can be kind of maintained through that movie relationship, but I still don't think they can do a superhero show. I think it would just tank.
It'd be great if they, you know, if the characters from the television series, if they were just S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, actually coexisted with the movies and referenced events that happened in the movies and even characters. But, you know, have them almost have it be like a Fringe or another, you know, like an X-Files, like investigating, you know, both, you know, high tech crimes and supernatural crimes and just doing the things that S.H.I.E.L.D. does. That'd be incredible. Why not? And it would be cheap.
Probably never going to happen, though.
Fuck.
They're going to figure out how to get Iron Man in it. Yeah, it's going to be god awful.
A Wasp show.
Yeah.
Like, this is our Avengers spinoff, Wasp. And you're like, great. Thanks.
All right. Well, let's cut to a break and come back and do some reviews.
Cool.
We're back for some reviews.
Heyo.
So this week we've got a couple movies and some games and a device even. It's a smattering of different things to talk about. But let's jump right in it. I emailed you guys and I said, hey, this just became available. We should watch this and talk about it. And that is Indie Game the Movie, which I believe we talked about. This got kickstarted, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
I think so.
I know we were very early supporters just to give us like, hey, we're so indie. We're so indie. We supported Indie Game the Movie before it was cool. But
I remember talking about it, but I don't remember much else. So it finally came out. It is a documentary that kind of follows the makers of Super Meat Boy, the makers of Fez, and the maker of Braid. As well as they have some talking heads and things from different places in there as well. And it kind of follows not only them making and putting out the game, but it also talks about PAX East, actually, a little bit. And kind of the trials and issues that indie game developers have swimming into the world of putting a game out. So we all watched it, so we can all kind of talk about it. Scott,
I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
Did you not watch it?
I watched it twice, so you can take one.
Oh, good. You watched it for me.
I did.
You watched it earlier today.
No, I didn't watch it. I kind of feel bad. No, I didn't say I watched it. I didn't say I watched it.
He never said he watched. He never said.
Yeah.
In his defense.
I guess you're going to have to sell me on this because I can't muster up the excitement to watch it. So
Okay, so let's sell Scott. This is a new mission. Now we're going to pitch Indie Game the movie to Scott, and then perhaps at the end of this, he will want to watch it so badly that he will throw his mic down and run in the other room and purchase Indie Game the
movie.
This
is going to be the strangest review ever.
Go for it.
Okay, I just was going to say very quickly, it is available DRM free online for, I think, $9.99. You can buy it straight from the site. You can stream it, download it, all that kind of stuff. Or you can buy it on Amazon and Xbox, or you can rent it on Amazon and Xbox, which is what I did, for like $3, something pretty minimal to spend and watch. So that was all I was going to say. And I think it's available somehow on Steam, too. I have no idea how they're doing that, but somehow you can buy the movie on Steam and watch it. So go ahead, Hillary. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
So I was just trying to make Scott feel better. The three of you have seen Batman, right?
Yes.
I have not seen Batman.
Oh my god.
I know.
Spoiler talk, though. What the heck?
I don't care.
You're gonna have to put your headphones down, or just.
I'm not gonna do that. I can't. Listen.
Okay.
I literally have nothing to say about the movie that is not spoilery that I didn't write in the blog post. So.
Okay.
It's fine. No. So Scott, you don't have to feel bad.
Okay.
What is going? You know, you try to run an orderly podcast around here.
You all had homework. You have to see Batman. Yeah. You have to see Indie Game the movie.
Not even hard homework. Come on.
All right. We started the podcast twice today.
So anyway, on to Indie Game the movie. So Indie Game the movie, like Matt said, follows the development of three indie games, all of which end up becoming hits. So it's not like we're following the development of some huge failures. So they all have happy endings.
Well, it's kind of the stages too. So Braid's already out at this point, and they kind of talk to the maker of Braid about the retrospective of how he felt making the game and putting it out. And then Super Meat Boy is putting the game out literally while the movie's going on. And then Fez is kind of being made, but, you know, famously got delayed all the way until this year. So it follows that story, too. So,
yeah.
Ash.
Yes.
What did you think?
So I really enjoyed, I always like hearing about the process and seeing these, like, to even call them teams. It's like more like duos, to see these duos of gentlemen end up, you know, becoming millionaires from the development and creation of their own IP is pretty awesome and pretty inspirational. But it's also terrifying to see how much these guys have at stake. And, you know, there are a couple instances where Phil Fish is talking about the making of Fez, and he literally says, and granted, he's a rather dramatic individual, but he literally says that if this game never came out, that he would kill himself, like that he has so much riding on it that he would end his own life if this game never actually came out. Because, you know, it's not just the time and the effort, it's also a lot of these guys have a lot of their egos tied up in the game as well, and a lot of their credibility. So I just
love that his whole thing was that he actually said, he did say that if the game fails, he'll kill himself, but he said, if the game does succeed, then I have my life to look forward to. Like, I just felt like that was just too far. I mean, in my head, I was like, you're done. I don't like you.
So Hillary, yeah. What did you think of the movie then, Hillary?
Well, I actually got to see it twice. So that's because of a series of events. But it was better the second time around, actually, because I think I went in. There were some polarizing statements actually made at the beginning of the movie by Tommy, who worked on Super Meat Boy, which I will now refer to as Super Meat. So Tommy, who makes Super Meat.
This is episode 69. You know? Wouldn't be 69 without talking about Super Meat.
Super Meat.
Oh, no. No, he made some pretty huge statements that I just reacted to violently, I guess. So the whole movie was kind of colored in like a very negative, like, oh, they're so elitist, oh, whatever, you know, making shit games for the masses. That whole thing.
Was it that stuff? And then also the I'm the best programmer ever. I could program anything I want.
Yeah,
and you know, I don't want to ever work for EA or whatever because I don't make shit games.
Yeah,
like that was like, I was like, excuse
very
me,
bold. Very bold statement.
Pardon me.
And
yeah,
I'm sure making those statements did probably tick a lot of people off because, you know, those games a lot of people like.
It was pretty interesting though, because on the flip side, Edmund, his partner in Super Meat Boy,
awesome,
who was probably the most likable character in that movie, talked about how it was surreal that his game was coming out and doing better than Fallout New Vegas ratings wise the same week. And he was like, this is a game that I'm going to buy. He's like, this is a game that I'm going to buy and play. He's like, and I have a game out that's getting like surreal ratings at the time, you know, on the same day that this massive game's coming out that had thousands of people work on it, I think is what he said.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It was a cool story. I mean, I watched it with a more positive sense of things after I'd seen it the first time. So it's a great movie, and it does have rewatch value, because I did find I was listening to things more than the second time than I was the first time, because I think I was again reacting to things. So it is a great movie. Absolutely see it. And it's a lot of insight into what crunch is all about and cert, and you know, some of the process steps in how games are, you know, put out, and also some of the drama with working with a vendor like Microsoft, where some things don't always go perfectly, which is I thought was really interesting.
Well, it was interesting to me because I will say my little synopsis is that this is probably one of the most inspirational movies about the least likable characters that I've ever seen in my life.
It's true.
I mean, I loved it. I watched the movie. I really liked seeing all their processes and seeing how they work differently. And I loved it, like, made me want to make something, you know, like when I finished, I was like, God, I want to go out and make something now. Like this is awesome. You know,
definitely inspirational.
And I mean, they of course do not touch upon the fact that here's these three teams that both come out and make an insane amount of money for the small amount of people that they are. I mean, they put a lot of time and effort into it, but they still make a lot of money off these games. Mm-hmm. But the point that they don't make is there's for every one of those games, there's probably another, you know, who knows how many indie games that come out that make $0 after years of somebody putting their life into it. Which is what I felt was really crass about the things that Phil Fish said about, you know, wanting to kill himself and all that if the game doesn't come. I'm like, you know, I understand you put your entire life into this, but there's a lot of people putting their entire lives into this kind of stuff, and all games don't make
into whatever
anything. Yeah. You know, music, you know what I mean? Art, TV, whatever it might be that you make. There's plenty of creative people making things that don't do well, and they're not all going to go kill themselves because, you know, it just was ridiculous. But it also did. My joke is that it did make me want to go trim my chops immediately while watching Phil Fish's go through the stages of like out to here and then back in and then like down to here and then up above his head. I was like, what is going on, man? Gaining weight.
Yeah.
Worst diets ever. The movie does nothing for stereotypes.
No.
One guy lives in his parents' house. The other guy's an elitist prick. The other guy, like, it just was like, come on, can we get, like, you know, the guy who had. And the thing is, I think that's what made Edmund so likable, was that here's a dude with a wife who lives in his own apartment, and he's just putting his heart and soul into this game because he truly loves gaming.
Yeah.
And you see him, like, talk about things that he made when he was little, and he talks about, you know, other games that are huge that he loves, and, like, awesome.
His story that he told about his grandmother supporting him as a kid,
yeah,
it really resonated with me because it was the same sort of thing for me, not to get all sappy, but my grandparents would babysit for me a lot, and I, you know, you guys know I like to just doodle and stuff like that, and my grandma was the same way. She liked to draw a lot, so whenever I'd hang out with her, we'd draw together, and she'd always tell me, like, you should just keep drawing. She was always, like, the most supportive person probably in my life, and to see that he had, like, a similar sort of background, I was just like, okay, I like this guy. He's just an honest, hardworking guy who really just wants to do the best thing that he can do. So I was all about, and like, I hate platformers, but I seriously contemplated buying Super Meat Boy just to give the guy a couple bucks.
Yeah, no, I hate that game, but if you want to buy it for that, that's fine.
Yeah.
Let me ask a question, since you guys saw the movie.
Would
this particular documentary be interesting to somebody who is not a gamer, or like maybe doesn't play a lot of video games? Like, you said there was like inspiration to like build something after you saw the film.
Yeah, I think it illustrates to somebody who maybe doesn't understand, when they see something like Fez or Super Meat Boy, which looks low res kind of in a way, you know, and it looks, it doesn't look like, you know, Mass Effect or something. It's not super high res, amazing character models. It's these little artistic pieces. I think what it does is illustrate the amount of effort that goes into even something like that. And, you know, Edmund talks about how he built planning the levels and how he designs, like, you know, there's no tutorial, but he tells you like how he challenges a player to do something and then kind of re-shows you that at a later stage in a more difficult manner, or combines it with other things to make it a challenging kind of puzzle game. So I think it would be good for that. I think you probably need some interest in gaming to really enjoy it, but
I think that, yeah, I definitely think you should probably have at least a sense of, maybe if you're not a gamer now, you may have been, like, our demographic would probably appreciate it because we all grew, most of us, with Nintendos or had friends that did, you know, that kind of thing. The thing I feel people would react to, or not like the movie, is just that, you know, 3 out of 4 main characters are completely self-obsessed. Yeah. And that's really difficult to watch.
That's kind of what turned me off of the movie from watching it.
Yeah. So like Jonathan Blow, he was the one the braid guy, you know, he was just kind of sitting up on a pedestal saying, oh, well, I over-communicated and now, you know, this and that. And he
talked about how he was mad that people didn't get the game in the way that he got it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, Phil is, I wanted to crash. I just wanted to drop kick my computer. I couldn't even stand listening to him for 5 minutes.
You just
wanted
to shake him.
Did it not put into context what is going on with Polytron and Microsoft right now a little bit?
I don't, but the thing is, I'm like rooting for his failure at this point. Like, I hope he like gets off the gaming landscape like right now. I mean, he's awful. Like,
I mean,
I felt dirty watching the movie. Just his scenes. I mean, I'll tell you, Edmund redeemed the entire thing.
He did.
Edmund's amazing. And Tommy. Tommy's like so like, wah, wah, I don't have a car. Wah, wah, I don't have a woman.
But then you hear what he did with his money, and that redeems him as well. Because the first thing he does when he gets a paycheck is pays off his parents' debt and like fixes everything that was wrong with his family's lives, and then goes back to doing what he loves. So, yeah, I mean, he was kind of digging himself out of a hole, but, you know, I think a lot of us have probably been there before.
Well, I mean, here's the thing.
Just reveling in his sacrifice.
Here's the thing.
Reason to watch the movie.
Here's where I give Phil Fish credit, though, or even Tommy to an extent, is that when you listen to what Phil Fish was going through at that time, and not personal stuff, like, yeah, he had a lot of family things that he talked about briefly, but that legal battle that is the reason that Fez did not come out until 2012. Right. That is stressful, and that's an amazing amount of stress to be at PAX with your game and have no idea whether you're legally allowed to show it at PAX. Is a crazy thing to have to deal with in that moment. And I can understand that maybe weren't seeing Phil Fish at his best throughout this movie.
No, but he, even when he was accepting an award, he was a complete douchebag.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a douchebag. I mean, there's an extent.
Like, come on. Yeah.
But he did have a monocle up on stage.
Yeah, I mean, he's just one
who
of those...
swims with their gray bands on. First of all,
oh, that was a directorial choice, I believe, and not Phil Fish. But and the thing I will say about Tommy is that guy looked like he hadn't slept in maybe 6 months. And what you were seeing at the end there, where Edmund's gaining, you know, I don't think you can ruin a documentary, but Edmund's gaining all this joy out of things that he's seeing people react to Super Meat Boy, and his wife's like crying and he's laughing and it's all great. And they show a scene where he's like trying to communicate this to Tommy, and Tommy's just like, I don't care, man. I'm tired. I just don't care. And it's like, you want to just like punch him and be like, dude, like, your game just sold 20,000 copies in a day, and you're acting as if you've got more important things going on right now than that. But then I thought about it. I was like, the dude is exhausted. They talked about how they had like a 1 month push to get the game out on time for Xbox, and they basically just worked 90-hour weeks to get it done. But
I think that Phil Fish encapsulates more than just, you know, the indie gamer stereotype. I think he's a really strong player for the I'm an artist, therefore I can get away with anything.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of self entitlement, just because I'm a true artist and no one else knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
So that has never resonated well with me. And he was just like the extreme of that. So yeah. I couldn't handle it.
but I would definitely say, Scott, it is a really good watch. I really highly recommend it. The people in it can get annoying for certain reasons, but like seeing the processes, seeing these guys work through these massive things to put out with a team of one or two people is really pretty inspirational and pretty amazing, no matter how kind of
From a technical standpoint, also, the film was beautifully directed and beautifully shot.
Yes.
Okay.
And definitely. All the angles they used and whatever equipment they were shooting on, it looked phenomenal.
And the music, they used in-game music from like Fez and from Super Meat Boy and stuff, and kind of interwove that with other soundtrack that they had. It all sounded great. It was like perfect toned.
Really well done documentary, content aside.
So definitely, I would say, you know, you don't have to go buy it for $10, but definitely rent it for $3 from Amazon. It's worth watching. It's a good movie.
All right.
So Hillary, do you want to take your headphones off and walk away from this one, or do you want to hear the spoilers? Because we're about to unleash on Batman, I feel.
Yeah, I guess before I would have said no, but because I really want a Diet Coke, I'm actually going to step away. So I will step away, and I will I'll be back in a minute, but I'll keep my headphones off.
So if you are like Hillary and have not seen Batman yet, Dark Knight Rises, and you do not want to know anything about the movie because it is near impossible to talk about the movie without getting into some spoilers.
No, I literally ran out of the room. Sorry.
Yeah. Then you should probably skip ahead a little bit here, and we're going to get into it. So Dark Knight Rises came out. It's the final in Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy. We all went and saw it. I actually went and saw it on the Friday that it opened. And I think you guys saw it that weekend, right? Or this week or whatever.
Yeah, I saw it.
Did you manage to avoid all spoilers before seeing it?
For the most part.
Yeah.
Like 99.9% of them.
Awesome. I did too. So my review, I put up the review online. It is mostly positive, which is generally how I feel about the movie walking away from it when we don't talk about the things that are spoilery that happen in it. So I wanted to do a talky talk about it because I wanted to get into these spoilers and see what you guys thought.
Can I do this entire portion as Bane?
I would only hope that you could. Was that not... I don't understand his choices in making things near impossible to understand when you're sitting there listening to it.
Batman, it's me, Bane! Yeah, that's the only time I'm going to do that.
There you go, the thing.
And there was one scene, Melissa and I were laughing because it was like, he's like, I'm going to kill you. And then Batman's like,
I can do my time. I don't know why.
And then they cut, and Gordon's in the hospital, and he's like,
you got it.
And I'm like, I can't understand anyone in this movie. What is happening? I was so angry at that point. But anyways, the voices are comedic.
Yes.
But
So
you guys got my general thoughts pre-spoil. I know, Ash, you said you pretty much agreed with what I had written, but how did you guys feel? Did you like it? Did you walk away happy?
Do you want to go first, Scott, or would you like me to go first?
I mean, I guess I'll go first just because I don't like know anything about the comics or anything. So
sure.
I have no nitpicky remarks as far as like canon goes or anything like that. So, just as a dude who went to see the movie, I liked it. I will say that like it is a difficult movie to watch because it's pretty depressing in the middle of the film.
Yeah.
And that alone, like I was sitting in the theater and I was like, you know, I'm telling myself like as I'm like stomach cringing, I'm like, I know this movie is good and I know that like if a movie makes you feel something that it's working, but like I'm feeling pretty shitty right now, you know, like watching this film. You really do get that sense of despair about like what is happening like to the city and stuff like that. So but other than that, like I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie. I was like stoked that Liam Neeson was in the movie because I like him, you know. So like I didn't know that he was gonna show up and I thought that was cool. And I like how, you know, I guess I sort of took for granted the fact that it like it's a trilogy. And I didn't really consider the fact that like there would be callbacks to things that happened in previous films, you know, because I don't really view the second film as like directly following the one before it. You know what I mean? Like you can kind of process that movie without seeing the first one, but you really can't. Like if you hadn't seen this first movie, you'd be lost, I think, or it wouldn't have as much of an impact.
I think
if you
didn't have any relation to who those characters and villains were, then you'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
And maybe the only other thing I'll say about it is that I just like how these films can take something like a comic book, which, you know, there's quite a, you know, like a suspension of belief most of the time, and turn it into something that seems very like real, like, whoa, this is happening, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
Ash, what were your general thoughts?
So yeah, I did agree with Matt's review up on nerdappropriate.com. I think it was a really good spoiler-free review, and it didn't tear the movie apart. There were a lot of things. I think structurally, the whole first half of the movie was I don't want to say boring, but it was all build up for the second half of the movie, which is, you know, that's acceptable and fine. But I also feel like not really a whole lot happens in the first half of the movie. And then, you know, and I said this to you guys just in passing, but I feel like the thing that makes Batman so so incredible is his ability to fight. And the whole second half of the movie, you know, there is a really great climax to the film, but it's mostly vehicular combat with very little no fighting really at all. So I was like, well, I don't want to watch Batman, you know, drive around in the fucking bat plane or whatever the hell that thing is. And Catwoman, who was absolutely fucking incredible, who I wanted to see fight more, I don't want to see her on the tumbler for a half an hour. I think those things are cool, but I didn't go to a Transformers film. You know, I went to a Batman film because he uses cool gadgets. He solves crimes like a detective, and he is an awesome fighter.
Yeah.
And they didn't utilize a lot of Batman's actual, like, what makes Batman Batman. Like, you know, they call him the great detective, and he didn't really do all that much detective stuff, like, at all. And he didn't, you know, didn't use any batarangs, didn't use his bat grappling hook, barely used any of his cool shit. And I was just like, what is going on with this movie in the second half of it, you know? And that was just like, you know, a minor gripe. I also feel like Catwoman was really underutilized. I think Anne Hathaway did an awesome job. She was like a fucking great Catwoman. And I feel like they, you know, they didn't use her as much as they probably could have.
I think she was great in the movie, and I liked the type of Catwoman they gave her. I don't think it really felt like she was Catwoman, though. Like, it just felt completely underdone for me, but... Go ahead. You can finish.
Yeah. As for, like, you know, fanboy gripes, I didn't really understand the choice of making Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. I understand why they made him Robin, because somebody else has
fuck,
to.
Though?
Like, but why? Okay,
that
here's
was the
question.
Cheesiest fucking moment I've ever seen in a goddamn movie.
Well, yeah, right? Like, why didn't you just call him, like, actually use a Robin name?
Yeah,
like why
you got like seven to choose from? You can't pick one.
Yeah, right. Like, oh, my real name is Robin, and you're like, what? Robin's name was never Robin. Like, it'd be like Batman saying, yeah, my real name is Batman. Like, what the fuck are you talking
it was
about?
The dumbest moment I've, and everybody was like, it was such a crazy reveal, and I'm like, what? No, it wasn't. Yeah. It was just fucking stupid. It was like, and he's not even gonna be Robin. Like, if the point that they were leading up to is he's gonna like take over Batman's mantle or whatever, which is fine, but then. Don't like why like none of it made any sense. It just felt like a stupid way to shove Robin into a movie without needing to shove Robin into a movie whatsoever. Because his character was totally fine otherwise.
He was great, right?
Yeah.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt was great, and he did a great job. But like, if you're going to introduce Robin in that way and have him do no Robin shit, like not throw any, you know, Robin weapons or not put the mask on or anything like that, then at least give him a little bit of his character's actual background and maybe the character's actual name, just because, you know, the character's been around for God 40 plus years. Yeah. You may as well, actually give him some service.
Robins. He could have picked any one of the Robins and used that backstory and gone forward with it. And everyone would have been like, that's so awesome. He worked Robin in without putting Robin in the movie. And no one would have shit about that. But like, instead he's just like, maybe I should use my real name, Robin. And I was like, heard that, and I was like, I want to punch myself right now. It just ruined his character.
I was in the same boat as you.
So okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You, because I forgot what I was going to say.
Bane, right?
Yeah.
Bane! Hey, Matt.
I heard they redid his voice. I heard that he had another voice when they shot it originally and then redid it. And did it not feel like his voice was never connected to him or actually in the scene that he was in? Like, it was always the same tone, the same volume, the same, like, it was the same exact everything every time you heard him talk.
Yeah. That's true. Like I was telling Chrissy today, I mean, obviously it was like, she's like, why did they make him sound like that? We were talking about this at breakfast. And I was like, well, obviously all his lines were dubbed in after using ADR because that's what they have to do when people have masks on and stuff, especially if there's like a lot of background sound and yeah. they'll go in and actually, you know, do the voices after that scene's actually been shot. And but I'm like, where did someone make the decision to make him sound like crazy wizard Sean Connery?
Yeah.
Like, hello, Batman, I'm coming to get you. It's like, what is this?
And then the fanboyism thing is they took Venom out of it. They took his like his super juice that makes him all powerful. That is essentially what it is, out of the movie, and gave him some kind of breathing mask that can hurt him if you break it, right? This is his weak spot, is his mask. So it's all building up to like Batman can't beat him. So Batman punches the mask like in half, like breaks the mask. And what happens 2 minutes later? The girl, who we won't spoil yet, walks up and just snap like they're fucking Legos, snaps it back together. And the dude's totally fine all of a sudden. I was like, what the fuck is the point of this thing? Like it seems so pointless throughout the whole movie. And his fights
they never really explain like what his mask is.
The only thing I can figure is that in the pit he had his face literally beaten in, and that was the only way that it held his face together was having the mask.
Yeah,
but like he didn't feel all powerful. I mean, like they kind of showed some scenes where he could like punch things kind of hard, but like he just seemed like a good cage fighter, and Batman was old. Like that's what it felt like, you know. Even though he wasn't old and never looked old or out of shape. He's like, yeah, I'm way out of shape. And he like pulled his shirt off and is like massive muscles and like perfect stomach. I'm like, what the fuck? You're not out of shape. I'm out of shape. I'll shoot you out of shape.
One qualm I have with the fighting, and this is obviously, you know, it was good.
Yeah.
But there were a couple scenes, especially the first scene between Bane and Batman, where Batman inevitably gets his spine broken. Spoiler alert. Didn't we call that like episode 5, by the way?
Actually, you called it.
I was like, they're going to break his back. So that scene happens, and I was watching, and I'm like, I understand that Batman's supposed to be slow and old at this point, but God, that was horrible fight choreography.
Yeah, it was.
The next morning, I watched the film Big Stan with Rob Schneider, where he's trained in Kung Fu and then goes to prison. And the fight choreography in Big Stan was much better than Batman Dark Rises.
Well, and then, I mean, to further that scene, I think my biggest thing with it was what was all plot. So, like, I can forego the mask and the, you know, no venom or whatever, and like I can ignore that stuff. I can ignore him being called Robin at the end, but when the movie consists of a storyline where essentially Batman is supposedly like completely old and out of shape, and then within what like a week feels better and is starting to fight Bane all of a sudden, like he goes to a doctor and literally is like, oh, I'm good now, no worries, I'll fight Bane, and then gets his back broken, then he goes to jail, right? But where does he go to jail? No one fucking knows. Did he fly him to Iran at some point and drop him in a pit somewhere? Where was he? Where did that happen?
Who knows?
It was like ridiculous.
It looked like it was in the Middle East. Absolutely.
Was this pit was not in the comic books? Nothing about this prison or whatever?
I don't know of it.
I read.
I don't remember. But so then he, you know, miraculously over the shape of what I guess is 2 months. They really munge the dates at that point, start talking about time like it's nothing. So in 2 months, he's miraculously better. Now remember, he has $0 at this point. He has nothing. They make a big deal out of the fact that he lost everything, and he climbs out of a pit, and then he's in New York. Did he walk to New York? How the fuck did he get to New York magically, like immediately too? And he's like Batman immediately too. Like, the whole thing was just like, where you're just leaving, there's just huge gaping holes in the plot. And then the biggest, this, and unfortunately I had already guessed this, which hurt but that was my fault, not the movies. The big reveal at the very end with Talia al Ghul, which I thought was awesome. She lasts what, 5 minutes, and then has like one of the stupidest death scenes I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, she died. I didn't even realize she died.
Yeah, she's in the truck and she's just like, and now I am dead. And I'm like, what? Like, and then he flies the bomb. If the whole point of Bane taking over the city is so that he can blow them up and make an example out of New York, which is supposed to be Gotham, which was a little weird too, because it was Chicago last movie and now it's New York. The whole point is to make an example and to cleanse Gotham, and he has a friggin' trigger that can set off the bomb. Why is he waiting 5 months to blow the city? He's like, I could do it right now, but guess what, everybody? I'm going to give you 5 months to think about this, and then I'm going to do it. But no matter what, I'm going to do it. So good luck with all this stuff that's going to happen for five.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, it made no sense.
And then, like, Batman, so we're going to totally spoil it. Batman flies off with the bomb, right? Saves the city, which is great. It's a cool, like, comic booky moment, I thought.
Yeah. And I was like, they killed him. This is so sad.
Oh, well, I knew Nolan was going to kill him. I thought Nolan was going to kill him.
I fixed the ejection seat, dumbasses.
Where did he get out? He dropped a nuclear bomb that has a radius of 6 miles that it's going to explode. He flies vaguely out into the ocean and then drops it somewhere. I mean, who knows where the fuck in the ocean he dropped it. And then he survives, which means he had to get out at the city. Like, when did he get out of the fucking plane? The whole plot was just like, who wrote this piece of crap, and why is it happening in one of the best Batman trilogies of all time? Like, it just killed me. It killed me while I was watching. I came out of that movie and I ranted for like 15 minutes to poor Melissa, who had to listen to me bitch about all of the plot holes going on inside of the movie.
There were quite a few.
And she was like, I thought it was a fun movie. And I was like, well, I'm glad you liked it. I was like so pissed off about everything. It was ridiculous. And then I tried to write the review, and it was going to be an angry review. And I was like, it wasn't a bad movie. That's the thing, is like, in the context of the trilogy, take away the plot holes, it's not a bad movie. It was executed well. Everything was done well. It just was like, I just slayed me. Some of that stuff just was like, I couldn't get over it. I don't know. Did no one else have a problem with the ending? Because all I keep hearing is that the ending was amazing. And I'm like, who thought that ending was amazing?
So here's the deal. For some reason, I didn't catch the Talia al Ghul thing. I don't know why. I just wasn't. I guess it's been seriously like probably over 5 years since I watched the first film.
Yeah.
So I wasn't even thinking Ra's al Ghul at all. Like,
yeah.
It was the last thing on my mind. Now, I thought it was a very sound film. I feel like, you know, it could have probably been shorter. I feel like it, you know, it was a lot of fun. I would have, you know, liked to have seen a little bit more kung fu and stuff.
So, all right. So that's the spoiler full talk.
So wait, did you like the movie or did you not like the movie?
I liked the movie. I'll probably never. I mean, if I watch it again, it'll be at home. I'm not going. I don't think I'm going to go back to the theater. It wasn't Dark Knight.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Dark Knight. I walked out of, and I had like a whole new love of all things movie and comic book and story. And that movie just was like, for as dark as it got, was still just, I mean, I watched it again recently and I was like, God, that movie is just so fucking good. It's ridiculously good.
And yeah. Okay.
This just felt like a really weak follow-up to it. It felt like what it felt like was that, because if you watch the first one, which is a really sound movie as well, it's not fantastic
it's
either.
Like an action flick or something, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. It's more action-y. What it makes me really feel like is Heath Ledger really did make the second movie as good as it is, or had a big hand in making it as good as it is. That cast, I think, really affected the quality of that movie overall. And you just kind of see it when you've got like a Bane with a cartoon voice and a Catwoman who's underutilized, you know, it just doesn't play off as well. So,
yep.
All right.
All right. That's it. Hillary, you can come back.
Come back.
And the ending of Batman where he, no, I'm just kidding.
Uh-huh.
So Scott, I'll stop nerd yelling and you can talk about Wrecketeer, which I think you've been anticipating since PAX.
I think nerd rage is completely acceptable, but yeah. It's appropriate for the podcast.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Every once in a while, you got to get it out.
So played Wrecketeer at PAX East, and it quickly became like some kind of crazy obsession of mine because it was, I mean, they kind of describe it as having like an Angry Birds mechanic, and like, you know, if you can get addicted to something like Angry Birds, like you can kind of see how this would translate to this, but sort of the major difference is that it's all Kinect based, and it's actually kind of, it's good. It's still good. I guess that's the cool thing that I can say about it. And, but I mean, it's not like necessarily super different from what we played at PAX. So, you know, basically you are like a medieval guy who destroys castles with a catapult, or like a ballista or something. And, the game has a bunch of different types of shots, and everything is controlled with the Kinect, and everything I feel like is pretty responsive and pretty fun. And I'm maybe like halfway through the levels in the game right now, and I'm having a good time. They added something weird to this game though, which is called Avatar Fame Star. And it's sort of just like another meta game that's built on top of certain Kinect games that use avatars, but it's not achievement based. They made up an entirely different point system.
Oh, weird.
So like you'll be doing things like there are things to do in the list of Avatar Fame Star things. And then there are achievements, like normal game achievements, right? So in Avatar Fame Star, it'll be like, you just blah, 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 and you get 50 points. And you're like, okay, sure, you know? And as far as I can tell...
Does it give you stuff for your avatar or something?
Yeah, I don't know if the things you get for your avatar are for, like, outside of the game that you're playing. But I know that, for instance, inside of Wrecketeer, like, I think you can unlock, like, a suit of armor and then wear that suit of armor when you're playing Wrecketeer. So I don't know how that stuff works like outside of the game, but I just think it's weird that it's like, hey, you know, we have achievements, but we made like another meta point system and now we have.
I don't think that's weird if that becomes like a way to outfit your avatar with stuff, because then it's enticing to play more Avatar Kinect games if you can, you know, wear that suit of armor in as your avatar does in your friends list and stuff like that.
I suppose you're right. And I guess maybe the easiest way to convey that message to people was to use points. But it's just weird that it's like, hey, you got points for this and points for that. And like, whatever, you know, like, for instance, Xbox released something recently called Kinect Play Fit. And that is like a meta game that tracks like certain. Calorie expenditures and certain Kinect experiences and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that awards achievements. Doing things on top of achievements you get in the game already. So
there are in-game achievement things that aren't Xbox achievements too for other games, aren't there?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just thought it was weird to like all of a sudden introduce this like new hey, it's Xbox. We got new shit happening. But anyways,
I would love to hear the community manager like Major Nelson. Hey, everybody's Xbox got new shit happening.
Yeah.
Good luck, everyone.
But yeah, I mean, let me tell you something else that's cool about this is that this particular game, I think maybe is the first game where they raise the achievement cap for downloadable titles. So instead of 200 points, it's 400 now. And I think that's something they're going to move to going, you know, with future arcade titles is to offer more achievements for like, and I always thought that was a good idea anyways, since like.
Yeah, 200's pretty low.
I feel like the effort you put into an arcade game is the same effort that you put into, you know, like a purchased, like a retail copy. But like, why is it 5 points in one and 20 another? But I mean, achievements are dumb and I love them. So I'm just, that's why I'm nitpicking them. But
I have a question.
Yeah, go for it.
Do you feel like this game requires the same kind of Kinect mojo of a Child of Eden or anything like that?
Okay.
Oh boy.
I want to say no, because I understand, like, you guys, we've talked about this in the past, like how, you know, with especially with Steel Battalion and how it's like you kind of have to, you almost have to like know what the Kinect is thinking you're doing instead of just doing what you think you should be doing.
Right.
And I think that this game is simple enough, not like the game is simple, but like the mechanic is simple enough that you can maybe quickly figure it out. Because yes, there is like, I would say there could be like a little bit of lag, just like there is in any Kinect game for like, you know, there's a shot in the game where you can like fly the shot like you're flying an airplane. So you stick your arms out and you go like side to side and you can go up and down and stuff like that. And I don't think that is so impossible to do, even though it's like obviously not, you can't move as fast as you like, let's say, would want it to. But if you're used to moving at the speed of what the Kinect can like reliably track, I think it's okay.
So, but you're not doing very hand-eye kind of intensive things.
No, because like the extent of what you're doing is like you grab the shot, so you kind of do this motion where you stick your arms out, you back up, you let it go, and the shot fires, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then every shot, just about every shot is activated. So you stick your arms up in the air, and then whatever the special ability of the shot is activated, right?
Okay.
So that's pretty simple. Some of the shots can be like maneuvered in the air, so you're just like slapping it kind of, so like it's all pretty like slapping the wrecking balls around, you know what I'm saying?
So this game's all about slapping it, is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, you
know how much a game about slapping it would actually sell? Well, let's be honest here. If they had like a Kinect like masturbation program, that would sell just like billions of copies.
I heard weren't people like in the you know, like the Xbox indie games, weren't people making like vibration games or like the
controller? They were.
All it does is it just vibrates the controller, right?
Yeah, yeah.
My favorite thing about this is if you actually are able to see Ash right now, he's like, as soon as it got dirty, he leans forward into the camera.
Whoa, I'm into this conversation.
And he's holding the mic suggestively toward his mouth with this like evil look.
He literally did. He sat forward like, oh, hello now.
Oh, now that we're talking about slapping it.
There actually is in the game, like the game has a lot of humor.
Are you talking about regular stuff again?
Yeah. No. I'm going to bring you back. Hold on. I'll bring you back in.
Okay.
So in the Wrecketeer, the game like sort of awards like bonus points for things happening. So like if, you know, if you fire a shot and you don't move it or whatever, it's like bonus, like sharpshooter. But there's one where it's like a bomb that explodes. And if you fire it right away and activate it right away, they give you a bonus called premature activation. And then the characters that are like, you have these two guys that are kind of like encouraging you throughout the game, and like one of the audio clips is he goes, "It happens to everybody." But so the humor,
is this part of the summer of games?
Oh yeah, this is summer of arcade. So this was the second title after Tony Hawk.
Awesome.
And it's the only title that's $10 instead of $15. So
cool.
I mean, I think it's totally awesome if you have a Kinect and have $10 and like to play games like Angry Birds.
Requirements.
It's one of those games where it's like you explain it and it's simple, but then you start playing it and then you become addicted to it. So
awesome.
You played the shit out of it at PAX. I'm not surprised
I did.
You've been playing it.
I'm playing the shit out of it now, even in 86 degree weather. So
sweet. There you go.
Take that.
All right.
Wait, guys, I have an idea.
Okay.
Do we all have to go to the bathroom?
No.
Just say yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So what we're going to do is on the count of three, we're all going to put our mics down and we're going to race.
My mic's on a stand.
Well, okay. So so forget that. You're just going to pretend that your mic is not on a stand and we're going to race to see who can be the fastest peer. All right.
I'm in. Let's
go. One, two, go.
I'm back. I won.
Me too. Wow. Amazing.
All right. So the question of the week this week came from Scott. I don't know what you were about to say, Hillary, but I talked over you, as is the case. So Scott, if you want to kick it off.
Yeah, I figured, I don't know if we can use the word Olympics. I don't know if that's a copyrighted word.
I don't think
so...
NBC's probably paying attention.
Yeah. In honor of the games, quote unquote, the question of the week is, the video game triathlon becomes the newest Olympic sport. What three games comprise the event? Pretty simple, yeah.
Wow. That's
and a
I
really
still don't
hard
have
question.
An answer. It really
That's
is.
A really hard question.
I feel like I knew what one of Scott's would be.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I just thought of it. Hold on. Thanks.
Do they have to be competitive games?
No, I don't think so, because it's more like a... you know, if you think of like a triathlon, you could do like something that's time or score based, or
all right.
It doesn't even have to be like head to head. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, head to head. So,
Ayo.
The first question.
Labels on them. So,
oh, okay.
Oh, look,
for ease of use.
I go think right ahead.
Let's get more organized. Every
I know. It's crazy. So
the only thing is, you put me on one word. There's an acronym. I have no idea who they are. So
that's
you're gonna have
part.
To help me through it.
That's Damn totally it. The fun part.
Okay.
Damn it.
So we got a lot of incredible answers from our community. So thank you guys again. The first one's from Anna from Press to Reset and Reset Transmission. And her answer is, number one, she says the Oregon Trail. Whoever survives the longest makes it to Oregon City, where the most stuff and help with the most stuff and healthiest people. My apologies. Number two, you're going to probably correct me on this, but I heard them talking about this game on their podcast. Ikaruga. I probably said that wrong, didn't I?
No,
yeah,
did you it? Got it.
How do you say it? Is it Ikaruga?
No, I think you got it. Yeah.
Might be a little more geek, but yeah.
So it's a bullet hell game. Whoever gets the most points before becoming horribly, utterly destroyed. Number three is the hardest challenge, Ship Simulator Extremes. Says whoever can play this game the longest before giving up in boredom. I heard her review of Ship Simulator and it sounded absolutely terrible. So that's pretty fun. So Oregon Trail, Ikaruga, and Ship Simulator.
It's exactly what it sounds like, the ship Ship Simulator. I wonder if she's ever played Oregon Trail. Have you guys ever played Oregon Trail?
Oregon?
Yeah. It's like pretty much
Oregon,
a
like my organs.
Yeah.
It's a zombie version of Oregon Trail.
It was amazing.
Oh, no way.
That's it just came out like a year ago, right?
Yeah, I think it was at PAX East, actually.
Yeah.
I should play that. I used to love the.
You can play it in browser, actually. You could play it right now.
I'm all about it.
Okay.
So next up is Vexing Vision, who is Bjorn. And they say Counter-Strike, obviously.
Man, that is a classic.
Super Mario Brawl. And then, of course, competitive Space Chem, which is a game I actually own that have never played. I got it on one of those where you donate the Humble Bundles.
Yeah.
Where you donate Monday. Yeah, that's right.
I went and looked this up online, and this game looks extremely difficult.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I own it.
Space Chem. Yeah, let me know how that works, because that looks crazy.
Probably won't ever play it.
At Daniel Pat. Daniel says, Darksiders, Ocarina of Time, Halo on Insanity. So I'm assuming these are probably like speedruns, maybe?
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
To get through these games. Did we play Halo on Insanity, or is he talking about Halo 1?
I don't know if we ever did. We played Halo 2 on Insanity. It's not Insanity. It's called something else.
It's like when the two with the shield and the two swords cross. Yeah, whatever difficulty that is called, yeah.
Yes. We did Halo 2 on that rating.
See, he's going for the longer form, you know, like that would take many days. It would have to start at the beginning of the Olympics and run through the through the whole week.
Yes.
Okay.
This is where you talk, Hillary.
Yeah. The fact that it's like bold and red. Yeah. I miss that. Like, what's going on, guys? Okay. Justin
Banks.
This is
a new edition, so.
Apparently, yes. Justin Banks, Midtown 583, says Marvel vs. Capcom, Portal 2, and Mario Kart. Nice. I was thinking about going the whole like genre type of game as well. So.
That's a good spread.
Yeah.
It is.
Really he always has really good answers, by the way. Justin does. That's a good one. So, Ash, why don't you say yours?
Oh, mine. I haven't actually thought about it yet.
Oh, okay.
This is a hard question.
It is. It is. Just give me a couple minutes and come back to me and I'll think of something.
All right. So next up, we've got Nico, who is some pony else on Twitter. And it is DDR, Wii Sports Plus Archery, and Xbox Just Dance. That way all consoles are used in each way challenging and sport-like.
I concur. I'm on board with that Wii Sports Plus Archery.
Is that a hard one? Is that one of the new, with the, I guess, Wii Sports Plus? Yeah.
Yeah, with the motion, yeah. And like, at the harder difficulty levels, there's like wind and all this other stuff you have to compensate for. So I think that'd be quite challenging.
Definitely.
Our buddy D the P, Hello Scientist, says, D the P. He says Battlefield 3, Dawn of War 2, and maybe Portal 2, Twitch, strategy, and problem solving. Good mix, destroy. I'll take it.
Nice.
I like
Dawn
it.
Of
so
War 2
like,
was so much fun.
It's like some competition. Like I don't know. Are the games supposed to be head to head competitive or like I don't know. You can make up whatever you want, I suppose.
Agreed.
Hillary, this is again where you talk.
No.
Oh,
it's
Ash.
Not. It's no,
Ash.
It's Ash. I told Sorry. You. This time I was reading the big red words.
I was doing I officially something else. Apologize, Ash. You're the dumb.
Of course. I accept that. The next is our good friend Nate Hales, who is at nhales80 on Twitter, another member of Reset Transmission. And he says, Mega Man 2, one of the hardest games ever made. Super Metroid, also another one of the hardest games ever made. And Marvel vs. Capcom 2 on Dreamcast, which I sold like an asshole in like my time of being very poor. sold like my Dreamcast and all my, I had these two giant arcade sticks. But anyway, great answer and also very good games.
So Sean DeVoe at Draken Armor. Yeah, sure. Yep. StarCraft II, Heroes of Norrath, League of Legends, Dawn of the Ancients 2. Thank you, Ash, for the help with the acronyms. And Street Fighter. So I'm assuming that he's going for different types of games as well. So thank
these
you,
are
Sean.
These are all head-to-head, I believe, right? Well, except...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Okay, I was wrong.
Don't give me these. Big red words. You're trying to confuse me.
What is happening?
We are on like hour three.
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
Ash.
What's happening? So I kind of pulled a couple out of my butt, but one would be getting teams together to do Mass Effect 3 multiplayer on Platinum and seeing how far people could go. And if everyone was beating it, well, then how fast did they get it done? So that would be a good Olympic sport. The other would be Marvel vs. Capcom 2, because watching those guys play is absolutely incredible. So I'm always jealous, and I've always wanted to be a better player than I am. And the last, I talk a lot of shit about World of Warcraft, but believe it or not, long ago, I was a pretty good World of Warcraft PvP player, and there was something pretty magical about it when it was in its heyday, and watching people do World of Warcraft PvP was awesome. So I'd like to actually see World of Warcraft PvP in there.
Nice.
Yeah.
So nice. last internet one was from at Mr. Slick, and he says Gran Turismo, Halo, and StarCraft encompasses PS3, 360, and PC, plus multiple genres, although I'd fail at the latter two. I would at two at StarCraft, and I believe Korea would probably win StarCraft over and over again.
That's why it's a triathlon, though. Yeah. You know, you got to be good at all three. You got to be well-rounded. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that just leaves us, guys. Scott.
So here's what I got. I came up with three events, right?
And see if I can remember. See if you match what I thought you were going to say.
So the first one is Score Attack in Tony Hawk Pro Skater. Right, because
okay.
Supposedly everyone knows how to play that game, right? Everyone's good at it, right?
All right.
So okay, speed run through Battletoads.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Oh shit.
Because it's a hard game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm gonna go with Survival Time in Tetris Attack.
Ooh.
Okay. I was gonna say Pokemon Puzzle League, but Tetris
PPL.
Attack. Same
yep,
game.
Yep. Same game. There you go.
Hillary, do you have an answer yet, or do you need me to go?
I do. I actually just thought of it. Okay. So the first, I'm actually gonna agree with Ash on the Platinum run for multiplayer Mass Effect 3.
All right.
And then I'm going to bring back an old game, a text-based computer game called Station Fall that I was really obsessed with. Because there's Olympic sports that are so like not, I don't know, they're just not usual. That's my contribution for old games that aren't relevant particularly.
Okay.
And then my third one would be probably Tekken. On PS3.
Wow.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Tekken Tag or just regular Tekken?
Like Tekken 6, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Just because, cool. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
Awesome.
We used to play a lot of Tekken back in the day.
I'm terrible. You guys kicked my ass so bad. Like, come over and play Tekken. I'm like, sure. And it was like basically me just bending over and you sticking things inside of me.
What's your obsession with like anal stuff lately?
I don't know. That's a good question. I did. I was forced to watch some True Blood, so maybe that's.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot
going the wrong
like,
way.
Yeah.
Hey, I love True Blood.
So Matt.
Hey, I'm here.
We're down to you. What's your video game triathlon?
I'm trying to remember. I can't remember if there's points, so we'll just say Time Run through Space Harrier.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Because I played that until my hands were swollen. Usually when I was a little kid. Points in Angry Birds.
Okay.
And my final one, I'm like trying to pick. I think I'm gonna go with the first StarCraft 1 multiplayer.
Oh, okay. So for like the nice. Top of the field, top 8 competes in StarCraft multiplayer.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's intense.
So I'm going with.
We should make this happen.
Let's do it.
Let's propose it to the Olympics.
That was a really tough question. Nice job.
Well, thank you.
That was Scott. He thinks of the tough questions.
Hard hitting.
What's your favorite color?
If you could make out with any video game character, who would you tongue kiss?
Oh my god!
Hold on while I pull that out my ass.
I like that you call it tongue kiss.
Whoa!
Do you say that to your wife? Like,
actually, I did just say that when she just left.
What's tongue kiss?
Yeah, come on, come over here. We're gonna tongue kiss. It puts the tongue in the mouth.
So that is episode 69 for the Rated NA podcast for nerdappropriate.com.
Yay.
Scott's got some editing to do.
I sure do. It's going to sound amazing.
Yeah. So if at the beginning it gets left in, we do have some reviews we left out. We're going to do them next week because this one ran long. But thank you, everybody, for listening. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. You can go to Facebook.com/NerdAppropriate. You can go to Google Voice and search for the Barren Wasteland. That is Google Voice, or Google Voice, Google Plus with Nerd Appropriate. We're on Goodreads. We have a book. We haven't started. We're going to get started. And you can email us all, Scott, Ash, Matt, or Hillary with one L at NerdAppropriate.com. And I think that's it. Go rate us and like us on somewhere because we like being liked.
Otherwise, yeah. I'll kill myself.
All right, Phil.
See ya.
I'm glad that we're all fans of our own podcast.
Yeah.
I love that part when we do this and when we do that. We are awesome.
The best podcast ever.